This program is called Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and it's your connection to local music. My guests today are Shannon Heaton, who is half of the husband and wife duo of Matt and Shannon Heaton, who will both be performing at the Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana tomorrow night. Of a program of traditional Celtic music and some of their own originals as well. Also on the program, Michael Bro, who is a former high school teacher, has been a college teacher as well, currently studying at the University of Illinois in graduate work, and coaching the Woodwind Quintet for the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. That's one of the ensembles performing on the orchestra's ensembles concert tonight. And I thought we'd have Michael on the program and talk about some of his experiences, including with the kids through the coaching process. That's on the later portion of the program today. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. The Philip Jones Brass Ensemble with guest piccolo player or whistle player and drummer in a performance of a Swiss popular melody known as the Basel March as arranged by Elgar Howarth here on FM 90.9. Played that music because there's some brass music on the concert tonight by the three chamber ensembles from the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. That concert is at 7:30 tonight for free at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Campus Town in Champaign, corner of 5th and John Streets. The string quartets of the youth orchestra on that program, also the woodwind quintet and the brass quintet. We'll be hearing more about that program later on Live and Local as Michael Bro, who coaches the wind quintet, will join me on the show. But first, we have a guest, part of the husband and wife duo, Matt and Shannon Heaton, performing traditional Irish music and some of their own originals. They're going to be playing tomorrow night in downtown Urbana at Heartland Gallery. That's a concert at at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, part of the Piper's Hut concert series of traditional Irish music. And I caught up with Shannon for a very nice conversation at the end of last week on the telephone, and just asked her how she and Matt had made their way to Irish music.
Well, it's a good question. It's a little circuitous. We have a lot of friends who were brought up in Irish music families, learned an instrument, and have been playing it all their lives. And for Matt and myself, it was a bit of a different journey. For me, I was brought up in a very creative, musically interested family. My father was a terrible harmonica player and had a nice singing voice. My mom played the piano and the violin and the guitar as an amateur. And we listened to a lot of classical music and folk music growing up. And because my parents were writers, we traveled all over the world, lived in Nigeria. We went all around Europe. We lived in the southwestern United States, all over the place in a van, as my folks were writing a book on American Indian journalism. And through our travels, and then when we were home, wherever home happened to be, we would often host visiting scholars who were musicians or storytellers themselves. So I was sort of brought into music through just meeting musicians all along the way. And then in grade school, I studied the flute. I had tin whistle lessons from a Belgian neighbor. And eventually, just through playing the flute, fell into Irish music while living in Chicago. And that became my big focus. And when I met Matt, when I was, I guess, it was my second year of college that I met Matt, and he was studying the classical guitar and was playing in a rock band in Chicago. And I said, hey, do you ever play Irish music? As a matter of fact, he had been dabbling in Irish music. And so I took him to a bunch of sessions. We started playing together, and turns out you can't do everything all at once. And so gradually Matt sort of streamlined his musical focus as well to Ireland. We went to Ireland, to Irish music. We went to Ireland. We went to Boston, played all over Chicago, and eventually settled in Boston. And Irish music is what we do full time.
And you sort of skipped the whole how did you become a romance thing, which I gather has an interesting story on its own.
Well, it sort of just grew out of getting to know each other and play music together. I met Matt first because I was looking for a guitar player for a wedding gig. And a friend of mine said, well, here are these three great guitar players, and Matt was the second one on the list, but he was the first one home. So it worked out.
Funny how these things just kind of... just happened in a fluke. Now, did you go to Northwestern? I see that he went to Northwestern.
Yes, I did. My first year of college was in Achiwasiksa in Suphanburi, Thailand. And when I came back to the States, I was able to transfer a bunch of credits to Northwestern. They have a great music program there, of course, but also a wonderful anthropology program. So we made an ad hoc degree for me in ethnomusicology, bringing all my language and music credits from Thailand, and so I kind of did a performance / ethnomusicology degree at Northwestern.
Was Paul Berliner still there when you were there?
He was. He was my advisor and wonderful supporter. Through him, I really I learned a lot about ethnomusicology, and I learned a lot about just being a creative musician and being able to pull in different influences from my early days in Nigeria on the reservations. In the southwestern states and the Indian reservations. And, I mean, I certainly play Irish music. That's sort of the musical backbone. But every once in a while, there are melodic things or arranging ideas that I think come from earlier times. In fact, we have a Thai traditional song on our new album.
I noticed that. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. So that's an example of, from early inspiration from Paul, feeling a little... less apologetic about bringing in some of the things that I've learned about and are part of my musical fabric, bringing that into my Irish traditional framework.
Well, I was curious about Paul Berliner because I actually did my undergrad at Northwestern.
Oh, how wonderful!
And ended up with also an ad hoc degree, but mine was in music history and criticism.
Oh, wow!
But Paul Berliner, I remember, was the very first... professor I had in music, because at the time anyway, in the freshman and sophomore music history sequence, they started with ethnomusicology. And I remember him sitting down with these sort of bells strapped to his feet with duct tape.
Yes.
And playing the imbira.
Yes.
And I thought that was the strangest looking thing. And I wondered if he ever graduated beyond the duct tape, or if he got some other more high-tech way of doing that.
But well, I would say the duct tape would probably be fairly authentic in, oftentimes in Ghana, in Nigeria, in African countries. Using what you have around was really obviously makes sense to do, but then became part of the aesthetic. Like in high life music, this came about in Nigeria because a bunch of old band instruments were donated, and people started playing them, and they were dented, and they were broken, and, they just started making music on these instruments that just happened to come through the pike, donated from some, who knows, music school in Iowa. And over time, this sound of the instruments being just a little bit of a different kind of a tuning thing, and just the look of them, tarnished and dented, that's the vibe. That's the aesthetic. And so you don't really see a lot of high life bands with brand new shiny instruments because it's not the aesthetic. And isn't that funny how something out of just necessity and what you have on hand becomes the way that you do things?
Now, I haven't heard that term, high life music. What is that?
It's Nigerian popular music, kind of a blend between some African rhythms and Western, whole hodgepodge of Western marching band music and pop music.
I'll have to explore that. That's not something I'd heard of, a term that I'd heard before anyway. A little bit ago, when you said that you had this Thai piece on your new recording, which is called Lover's Well, which is itself a wonderful name, you said you decided you didn't need to feel apologetic for including some of your other influences. Why would you feel apologetic at all?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the Irish tradition is a very rich one, and traditionally you learn music from one person or a bunch of people. We just pass it on from one person to the next, and some of the finest players obviously have learned from other fine players. It's very important, I believe, and I think a lot of people believe, with Irish music, that you truly apply yourself, learn from some of the masters, learn a great repertoire of music. In some cases, try to imitate people and then eventually develop your own set of rules and your own set of style. But there is really a tradition that is followed, and there are certainly lots of ways to break rules once you know them. But understanding those rules and understanding cultural norms, social conventions, musical conventions, is all part of entering into a musical culture. And it's something that I took very seriously, spent a lot of time in Ireland, spent a lot of time feeling very frustrated that I didn't know all the tunes. Turns out you can never know all the tunes, but, you know, I really worked hard to be able to fit in, and stylistically, repertoire-wise, socially. And after spending all that time doing that, sometimes it feels a little funny to bring pieces of your own personality, your own American, in my case, personality, through into the music. And so through working with Matt over all these years, we've been playing together since, in various contexts, since 1992, and it's been a real journey for us to find ways to honor the tradition from which we've come, from which we've studied, and then at the same time start to bring in ideas, repertoire, arranging sensibilities that are unlike anybody else. So something that we really enjoy doing now, that we felt a little shy about doing before because it might have put too much of our own personality on it and not, I guess, demonstrated a respect of the traditional roots of the music. Something that we used to do would just be sing a song the way we learned it. Well, now, if a song has 10 verses, I might condense it down to 4 or 5. And if a song has no chorus, I might add one. And, you know, this is because I grew up listening to pop music and folk music and country music, and that's something that I really like in songs. Something that we might do with an instrumental tune is add maybe a progression, add some guitar chords to it that might not be the more obvious harmonies that the tune is spelling out. And for some people, that can be a little adventurous. And for us now, it's fun. It's okay to do. But it wasn't always. So it's been a journey, and it's been a really wonderful one, and I'm glad that I spent all that time trying to figure out a few rules for myself, because now it's fun to break them, because now I know I'm breaking them. So.
Yeah, they often say that learn how to do it right, and then you can do what you want with in a lot of different fields. With your permission, I think we'll take a break and hear something from your new disc, and I'd be very interested to play myself this the Thai tune that you mentioned. Would you like to introduce it for us?
Sure, I'd love to. This is a song called Lao Duong Luen, and it's a song I learned when I was 16 from a marvelous singer in Suphanburi named Achan Jirapon. And this is a song of a man singing to a woman up in a window, and he's saying that his heart is full like the moon is full, and the beauty of this woman is spilling over him like the moonlight spills over him. And it translates to by the light of the full moon. And much like Irish traditional songs in the Irish language, a language that I don't speak, but in Irish traditional singing, it's passed on from one person to the next. So is Thai traditional singing. And learning this song, I think, is what a lot of my Irish singing friends experience. As soon as I start singing it, it's this immediate and complete way to enter right back into that space. When I first learned the song, every time I sing it, I'm right there. And I think the language has something to do with that. So funny enough, I have, I think, a little bit of a similar experience singing Lao Dung Lian to my friends who sing in Irish who come from Connemara.
Song that translates as By the Light of the Full Moon, sung by performed by Matt and Shannon Heaton. Shannon is my guest on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. That was really beautiful, and I thank you for sending us this disc, and this is from the disc called Lover's Well, the new album from Matt and Shannon Heaton, who are going to be performing in Urbana on Tuesday, May the 5th at the Heartland Gallery on Main Street in downtown Urbana. You can find them through the Piper's Hut concert series, and I'll tell you more about that after we finish our conversation with Shannon Heaton, who was kind enough to join me on the phone. And you were talking before we played that about not knowing the Gaelic or the Irish language, traditional Irish language. And I had a singer on here a couple weeks ago, Julie Fowlis, who sings exclusively in Gaelic. And she had her own reasons for doing that. And I wonder if you've been tempted to try to learn Gaelic or Irish. I'm not sure the differences. And secondly, whether you have sung in the language anyway, even if you don't really know it.
Yeah, you know, the Gaelic languages, of which Irish and, in Julie's case, Scots Gaelic, are members, they're beautiful languages. And Julie grew up speaking that language and singing those songs is a really important and authentic part of who she is as a person and as a musician. And for me, I didn't grow up speaking any Irish at all. And I didn't even know about the Irish language until I was 15. So for me, I've never really been tempted to sing in the language because I don't speak it at all. And because I happened to learn the Thai language when I was younger, and Thailand and Thai culture became a big part of my life, it makes a lot of sense for me to sing in that language, and that's why we do it on this last album, on Lover's Well. And it just, I would love to learn Irish, but there are so many other things right now on my plate. I'd love to even get better at Thai. I'd love to become a better flute player, a better singer, a better performer, more present on stage all the time. And with that laundry list, there's no time for Irish language for me, and there's so many people who do it so well that it's really not on my list at the moment. And I have no interest singing in a language that I don't really know and really speak. So that's the answer to that one.
Sure. Well, I was a little curious about that, too, because, you know, choral singers so often have to sing in a language that they don't speak, and, of course, so do operatic singers. And I was just curious if that sometimes extends to people who sing in traditional Celtic music or not, or at least in your case. So,
It's interesting. In a choral setting, there's so much, too, about the group experience and the group blend and the sound of the language with the group. The same in an operatic situation. There's so much about telling this story in its original context that's much bigger than just the one singer, whereas traditional music is so personal, and it's one person just sort of saying a story. It happens to be maybe with a melody. But I think it's something that's so personal and so, well, folksy. It's just like storytelling, that it is something that really, at least for me, needs to be something that I really believe and know about on some level.
Do you find anything particularly different about the Boston Irish music scene from the Chicago Irish music scene?
Well, they're both fantastic. I'm really glad to have gotten my feet wet in Chicago, and I still love going back. And there are wonderful musicians in Chicago, a vibrant session scene. The thing about Boston, also very lively with sessions, and just the sheer number of brilliant musicians out there is staggering. The difference is that in Chicago, it's just such a big city and so spread out that while you have lots of things going on, you don't always have musicians going to each other's sessions because it's just so geographically vast. In Boston, we're much, much smaller. The neighborhoods are much closer to each other, and as a result, everybody seems to go out to each other's events more often. And so I'd say that's a big difference. And I've really enjoyed getting to play with a bigger pool of players who all can share tunes in Boston in a way that I it was harder to find in Chicago.
It's kind of funny just listening to you talk about this and even just realizing that you spend all this time in Chicago and Boston, because those are kind of the two poles of my own interests also, because, you know, I went to school in Evanston, lived in Chicago for a long time, almost went to school in Boston, and have visited there many times. My sister lived there for a long time. It's the city I've always kind of wanted to gravitate to, but haven't made it there.
Oh, wow. How wonderful.
Yeah. So,
and do you find the same thing with the size of Boston?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the great appeals is that you can walk almost anywhere.
Yes.
You might get a little tired, but you could never say that about Chicago. And there's a lot of just the older feel of the city. But I wonder, too, now, doesn't Boston have a really large Irish population?
Well, you know, it's funny. Some years ago, Matt and I had some gigs in Clare, and then a few months later we had some gigs out in California, and it was fascinating. It never had dawned on me that Boston to Shannon Airport, it's a 5.5-hour flight. Boston to LA is a 6.5-hour flight. It makes sense that there are a lot of Irish people in Boston. It's the next town over. It's
yeah.
So close, where, you know, even Chicago, with a great Irish population, is just still not quite as densely populated with folks from, say, Connemara as South Boston.
And that's got to make a big difference, too, in having a deeper culture for traditional music, I imagine.
Yes, and again, like Chicago, but maybe perhaps even more so, the nice thing about the fact that you have a lot of Irish-born musicians and people in town is that there's a great breadth of generations of players. So we've had Joe Joyce and Jimmy Hogan and two fine musicians who have just passed away recently, and then still going strong, Larry Reynolds, some of these fine players who are from the older generation passing it on to younger musicians, six-year-old musicians who are the daughters of, you know, folks who've just come over from Ireland. So it's nice to have that. And you have people, too, who are maybe born in Connemara but lived in Boston their whole lives. They have a crazy way of talking.
Yeah, they do.
It's neat to have that link. It's neat to have that link. And there are a lot of American-born musicians in Boston, too. And there's still this directness with the music, though, because we're learning directly from people who are either from or have learned from directly from Irish players.
We're talking with Shannon Heaton on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. She and her husband Matt are performing at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana on Tuesday, May the 5th. And I want to play, as we end up here, something from your new disc. Would you like to... Oh, there's a bird in the background. What is that? Who is that?
Unfortunately, I think it's a clock here.
Oh, is it really?
And it's 12 o'clock, so it might go well.
It's a very realistic sounding bird in the background. I thought maybe it was a real bird of yours.
As we travel around the country, I usually do have one little bird on my finger at all times, you know, just to sing.
Are you making that up?
Yes.
Good. I thought it was a great image. I'll call you the Dr. Doolittle of Irish music.
Or Snow White.
So your new disc is called The Lover's Well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the concept behind this album and the title?
Sure. Well, as Matt and I were assembling songs for our new album, we kept noticing that each song had to do with love of some sort or another. It had to do with relationships, really. And some of them are very sweet romantic songs, and many of them have to do with jealousy, betrayal, parting of two lovers. And I think traditional music does this so well because there aren't many songs that have to do with I, you know, the personal pronoun I, or I am feeling this. They're more metaphorical, or they're more story-oriented. And there are obviously so many facets for relationships. Relationships are complicated, and I found that some of the most beautiful songs that we put together for this album were about two lovers saying goodbye for the last time, and it really dawned on us this idea of, I mean, it's not a novel idea, it's very simple, but, you know, every relationship, every life has an end, and you don't know how it's going to end. And so that's sort of, you know, that's part of the wonderful part of treasuring what's going on right now, if you love what's going on right now. And so as each of these love songs came onto the record, we realized this is a collection of love songs of one sort or another, and all the instrumental tunes had a kind of romantic tie-in or some kind of love story in the background. And so when we recorded the album, we recorded it in Wellfleet, Mass, down on Cape Cod, and the album title just came to us. It's The Lover's Well, so the well of songs for these lovers, but also recorded in Wellfleet. So.
And do you have a favorite song?
Well, something that became the title track, I guess you could say, is a song that we learned from the great Nick Jones, a wonderful English ballad singer. This is an example of a song that was originally a bit longer. I condensed the verses and I added a chorus. And as it happened, the chorus, the words are, deep is the lover's well, higher than heaven, darker than hell. Of courtship and marriage, the poets do tell, sweet is the water from the lover's well. And so it ended up, a lot of people call the song The Lover's Well. It's known as the Golden Glove as well. And I think it's one of my favorites. Dan Gurney is playing the accordion on this track, and Keith Murphy is playing the piano, and it was really a lot of fun to put together.
Shannon Heaton, thank you very much for joining us here on Live and Local, and I hope you have lots of folks come out and hear you and Matt performing at the Heartland Gallery on Tuesday.
Thank you. We're really looking forward to it, and we're so grateful to Dean Karas for putting together these traditional music concerts through his Piper's Hut series, and we're really looking forward to playing on Tuesday night.
And for information on the Piper's Hut concert series and this concert in particular, you can go to pipers-hut.com. Thanks very much, and have a great show.
Thank you. Thanks for chatting.
Time draws near when you and I must part. Little do you know the grief or woe of my poor troubled heart. You'll break my heart, nor let me hear you cry, for the dearest friends will have to part, so must you and I.
Matt and Shannon Heaton from their new disc called Lover's Well. And the disc was called, or rather the cut was called Lover's Lament, heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can hear Matt and Shannon Heaton tomorrow night at the Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana at 8 o'clock. If you're interested in tickets, visit the website pipers-hut.com. I believe that's the correct address because it's part of the Piper's Hut concert series. And you can hear some of the other concerts coming up in their series of Irish music events. Heartland Gallery is a small, intimate space, so you definitely want to contact them in advance to get your tickets for the show. Our programs today on FM 90.9 are sponsored in part by the Metropolitan Opera, continuing its series of live opera in high definition at neighborhood theaters. On Saturday, May 9th, the Met presents La Cenerentola by Gioachino Rossini. More information is at metopera.org, and that means Cinderella. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we're at 69 degrees at 12:39. I'll have a full forecast for you at 1, and then news headlines at 1:01, and more classical music from Julie Amacher at 1:06. My next guest is a fellow named Michael Breaux, who taught high school for 20 years, taught college for 13 years, and is at the University of Illinois currently doing a doctoral degree in... You know, I didn't even ask him, so we'll ask him here in just a second. But my interest in having Michael on the show today is that he is the coach for the Woodwind Quintet with the Illinois, with the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra, which is a group that I conduct. And they happen to be giving a short concert tonight. The Wind Quintet, the Brass Quintet, and the String Quartet are all performing a free concert at 7:30 at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. That's at 5th and John Streets. And I've watched Michael coach a little bit, and I wish that I'd been able to see him a lot more because he's got a lot of experience, and what I see, he's a very nurturing kind of person, probably more than I am sometimes working with young people. And so I thought it'd be interesting to hear some of Michael's experience getting himself to this point and also working with young kids, what's that like? So thanks very much, Michael, for coming on the show.
Wow, my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me here. It's a beautiful facility, and it's an honor.
Well, let's see if you say that after you're grilled mercilessly.
Bring it on. Which won't happen. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about what your experiences have been over good career so far.
Yeah, let me first of all start by saying that the Woodwind Quintet has been a real joy. When you asked me to do this, we sort of spoke about it. It seems like 2 months ago, maybe something like that, after I had helped out with the youth orchestra.
Right.
And I thought, what a great idea, because I love working with kids. I've been, obviously, as you mentioned, a high school music teacher, and I've taught private lessons ever since graduating from Louisiana State University, which is where I'm from. And the members, Eric Kobold, Jane Chu, Katie Flois, Annie Veloci, and Erica Allender, have been working their little tails off for only 5 rehearsals. And I think that they're going to be putting on a really wonderful performance of a great piece tonight. It's The Three Shanties by Malcolm Arnold for Woodwind Quintet.
And we'll hear those in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. So, about myself, I am a Cajun. I don't know how many of those have actually gone through these doors, but I grew up in South Louisiana in the town of Lafayette.
And you don't sound too Cajun.
Mais I can put that on like that. You want me to talk like a Cajun?
If you want.
No, I think we'll keep it
we
the
wouldn't
Midwestern.
Understand you.
Probably. So, for me, growing up in South Louisiana, I grew up on a farm, and my mom and dad instilled in me, and of course my brother, the love of music. Music was on in the house. KPEL, 1330 AM radio, was what we listened to all of the time. And they played not just popular music, but a lot of jazz. So I was really well versed in that kind of music at the time. And then everything that came to the university in town, the University of Southwestern Louisiana, we went to see operas, orchestra concerts, everything. So mom and dad were the nurturing parents that I really needed to become the musician that I am today. And that's one of the joys. They allowed me every opportunity. As a matter of fact, I audited a music appreciation course at the university when I was, I believe, a sophomore in high school. So my entrance into academia started early. After graduating from high school, went to Louisiana State University, where I majored in music education and woodwind performance. I did a double degree. The faculty was incredible. They allowed me to take lessons on all of the woodwind instruments and play juries on them, as well as doing all of the music ed work. I was drum major of the marching band, all sorts of other crazy things. And then when I graduated, it's funny, I was looking at a photograph on my Facebook page of my teacher, John Patterson. The instrument that I played my senior recital on, I was mostly a bassoonist back then, was his Heckel, his 10,000 series Heckel. A wonderful instrument, and he allowed me to buy it from him. So that's the instrument that I own to this day, and I still play it and think of him every time.
And I gather he allowed you to buy it at a reasonable price that you could actually afford.
Well,
or is that all relative?
Well, yeah, I think it's relative. I mean, Mom and Dad took out a second mortgage on the house. It was $9,000 is what they paid for it. It's well over $50,000. That's what it's worth now.
No kidding.
Great investment, but a great horn. It was one of those things. Every bassoonist that studied with John wanted that instrument, and I was the lucky one. I was the chosen one. We started talking about graduate schools when I finished. I was playing principal bassoon with Baton Rouge Symphony at the time, doing woodwind quintet music, working with the elementary students. And he decided that, really I should continue with teachers of his lineage. He had studied with Saul Schoenbach and all of those Philadelphia players. And he thought, well, Arthur Weisberg at Yale and Willard Elliott at Northwestern. I applied and was accepted to both schools and chose Yale. So I went to New Haven and stayed there for a few years, and that's what got me to New England. And I started teaching high school at Fairfield High School and stayed there for 20 years and started working at Connecticut College in Western Connecticut. And the faculty at WestCon, because I was adjunct, said, we'd love to have you, but you know what? You need a doctorate. You need to go get that doctorate. And they're the ones that put me in that mindset. I was playing with New Haven Symphony not long after that, and Carl Kramer, who's the director of the School of Music here, also a dear friend of mine, we're alumni from Yale, he played tuba, met me when I was doing the saxophone concerto that John Williams wrote from Catch Me If You Can. We had dinner, and he said, what are you thinking about? What are you doing? What's going on? And he said, are you thinking about getting a doctorate? I said, yeah. He says, you should think about UIUC. Well, I didn't know about UIUC. So he explained it to me. I applied. I knew some of the people that were here, Dr. Louis Baganzi and Jimmy Pugh from New York. I applied.
And here you are.
I'm here.
So are you doing the doctorate in music ed?
In music ed. I decided that was really the area that I really lacked in training. My practical application of playing, is clearly happening over the 20 years. I've been in the New York area doing recordings, Broadway shows, orchestras, chamber orchestras, solo work, all of that stuff. But it was really in the education field. How could I be a better teacher? How could I be a better mentor of young women and men? How could I do what I do on a daily basis better, more efficiently, and come up with a philosophical background for it all? And that's what I've been doing.
So how have you found these kids that you've had a chance to work with during these, as you said, only five rehearsals?
They've been incredible. A lot of energy. When we first read the three shanties, the first movement, they said, we love this. And I knew they would because it's such a wonderful piece. They've wanted to develop an ensemble sound based on what they experience in the orchestra. But with the woodwind quintet, we get to do it without all of those nasty string players. We get them out of the way, and we just get that woodwind sound.
And the brass players, except for the horn.
Well, the horn, yeah. But we have to have the French horn because that really is sort of the meat and potatoes of the woodwind section. So they've been working very, very hard. I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, that actually is something I always wondered about. We call it a woodwind quintet, but there is always a French horn, which is a brass instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Why not an English horn?
Any it idea? Wouldn't have the same power. The range of the French horn, it's almost the range of the piano, it seems. It goes so low into the bass clef and then so very high into the treble clef. And the sounds of the French horn and the bassoon meld so well together that you can create another. We call it, what do we call it, the bahorn or the French oon or something. Just where they blend in together. It doesn't become two instruments. It becomes one new instrument. Add the Chalmo register of the clarinet, again, we've got that darkness of sound. So for most of the composers and writers, using those five instruments, and again, it all comes from the orchestral sound palette. Those five instruments allow many possibilities. And then the French horn has the regular mute, the brass mute, and stopped. And we'll be using two of those sounds, the sort of straight mute sound, if you will, and stopped horn, which gives it metallic-like sounds. And that'll be used in this woodwind quintet.
Yeah, the stopped horn is where you, most listeners, I imagine, will have seen somebody play the horn, whether it's an orchestra or otherwise, and they always have the right hand in the bell.
Right.
And that's for coloring the sound, but you can shove it in there really tight, and you get this what's called, you stop the sound, and it actually, if you blow hard enough, it raises the pitch. You'd think it would lower it, but it raises the pitch, and as Michael said, makes it rather bright and edgy. And why don't we go ahead and hear the three shanties for Wind Quintet.
Beautiful.
By Sir Malcolm Arnold. These are just three of the pieces going to be heard on a concert tonight, a free concert by chamber ensembles from the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. That's at 7:30 tonight at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Campus Town in Champaign. And you're hearing this music and this conversation on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Three Shanties for Wind Quintet by Sir Malcolm Arnold, played by flutist Jamie Martin, oboist Jonathan Kelly, clarinetist Emma Johnson, horn player Claire Briggs, and bassoonist Susanna Cohen, here on WYNL FM Urbana. And you can hear a live performance of that tonight at 7:30 at McKinley Presbyterian Church at 5th and John Streets in Champaign. It's part of a free program given by chamber ensembles from the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. There's also the brass quintet from the orchestra playing several pieces, and also playing some Schubert, the string quartet, also from the orchestra. All of them have coaches who are currently graduate students at, or recent graduate students at the University of Illinois, and some of them quite advanced graduate students, in the case of my guest for just another couple of minutes here on the program. Michael Breaux coaches the Wind Quintet. And another word from Michael in a moment. I need to tell you, though, that WYLO's programs today are made possible by the Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their new location at Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. I'll have a calendar of a few events coming up today and tomorrow, in addition to this concert. But, Michael, in a minute or less, why did you choose teaching more over performing? I mean, I know you've done lots of performing, but your main thrust has been teaching.
Robert and Georgia Breaux, my mom and dad, both of them were public school educators. Mom was a history teacher and dad, industrial arts. I saw the impact, I felt the impact, I knew the impact, I lived the impact of what teachers could do with young people. And I think it's probably genetically encoded. But I'm very moved by affecting young men and women.
Well, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you've done in a very short while with this particular ensemble from the youth orchestra.
So am I.
And hope that they keep their heads together, which is always a lot of it, keeping concentration when you're a middle or high school student.
Exactly.
And I hope that some of our audience can go hear the fruits of their
efforts. I hope so, too. I hope they come by and say hello. And
it's a free concert.
On the concert.
That's right.
Yeah.
like to know that people were listening to the show. Michael, thanks for coming in.
Again, a pleasure. Thank you.
And here is just a quick look at some of the items on my calendar. We've mentioned the Ensemble's concert tonight at 7:30, McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. Tomorrow, a number of things. We talked in the early part of the program about the Irish music performance by Matt and Shannon Heaton at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana. That's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra is performing the final concert of its season tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And the guest conductor for that concert, Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, will be one of my guests on the program tomorrow at noon. UI Jazz Combos are performing also tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And University of Illinois faculty organist Dana Robinson is giving a recital tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Chapel of St. John the Divine in Champaign. That is on Wright Street. There are two St. John's chapels on opposite corners, but this is the Episcopal Chapel of St. John the Divine on Wright Street tomorrow night at 7:30. You're listening to Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us today. Our forecast for the afternoon calls for a partly sunny sky and a high temperature of 72. Partly cloudy tonight, the low 50. Partly to mostly cloudy tomorrow, with a high of 73. We're at 69 right now. You're listening to WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.